Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd bear the pain of chromomycosis if you infected me with the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, with what's coming.
Hey, Tony. Here's what's coming. Your five-step inclusive strategic plan. The author of the book, Inclusive Strategic Planning for Nonprofits, talks you through her strategy of kickoff, discovery, prioritization, planning, and implementation. She makes your plan a valuable living resource rather than a dusty volume sitting on your shelf. Renee Rubin Ross is CEO of The Ross Collective. On Tony's Take Two.
We're at 26 NTC.
Here is your five-step inclusive strategic plan.
It's a pleasure to welcome back to Nonprofit Radio a recognized leader on board and organizational development and strategy. Dr. Renee Rubin Ross is the founder and CEO of the Ross Collective Consulting Practice. Her new book is Inclusive Strategic Planning for Nonprofits, a five-step process to expand energy, alignment, and opportunity. Her company is at therosscollective.com, and Renee is on LinkedIn. Renee Rubin Ross, welcome back to Nonprofit Radio.
So good to be here. Last time we met, we were in person at NTC a couple years ago.
It was one of the NTCs a couple of years ago. This is less hectic and longer. We have more time together. Congratulations on the new book.
Oh, it's so exciting. Yeah, thank you.
I know it's a huge undertaking. Congratulations. Congratulations. Yeah. Lots of people have books in mind that never get written. Yours has.
Well, it took some time and lots of support, which we could talk about, but it was an inclusive process actually to write this book. Yeah.
Outstanding. Then you're walking your walk. Very good. Very good. Yeah. I don't know if I called this out when you and I were at NTC together, but you know, I'm a huge fan of alliterations. And you are Renee Rubin Ross. I just love that your family was able to put that together. Did you marry someone named Ross? And Rubin
Yes, my partner is Ross.
I love it. I love it. This all came together. Renee Rubin Ross. R3.
Triple R, R3.
You're like, you could be a ranch.
I didn't do anything to make that happen, really, besides, you know.
No, I'm sure.
All right. But, good fortune. Know, yeah.
I wish my family, I wouldn't be mine. Like Matthew Martinetti, or I don't want to change my surname, but maybe the first name. But no, I'm just a big fan of alliterations. So let's talk about inclusive strategic planning. Why don't you, just high level view, what is inclusive strategic planning?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So one of the key ideas in the book is there are different people who participate in planning, and what I was trying to get at is there's a lot of books that are about the tools and the process and all of that. And I refer to some of those. But what we're talking about, what I'm talking about in this book, is really about who is in the room doing the visioning and building the goals and the importance of making that an inclusive process. So I have this one graphic, which is this idea of deciders, builders, and sharers. And a lot of processes have deciders. That's pretty obvious what that is. A lot of processes have sharers. Those are the people doing focus groups, interviews, all of that, sharing their perspective. It's really the builders that make this unique. And that is having a wider group who's going to be weighing in on their own future. And I think that in these times, more than ever, we need to incorporate people's perspectives in whatever's going to happen next. We need people to feel like my voice matters. My perspective matters, and that's what an inclusive process is.
So this is not a strategic planning process that the board goes off onto a retreat at a country club for a weekend and comes back. They've met with the CEO and maybe the chief development officer and the CFO, and then at the end of the weekend, we foist on the nonprofit the 3 to 5 year strategic plan, the 5 year strategic plan.
I teach a class through Cal State East Bay in strategic planning. And I have a lot of people that come to my, I have some people that have come to my class who have experienced strategic planning drama, exactly what you're describing, where it's like, wait, we got this thing. We don't know where it came from. We don't know who thought of this. This doesn't make sense to us. We don't feel invested in it and all of that. And so this really, from the beginning, it is designed in to say, who are the people who are going, who, first of all, who, for example, I'm doing a retreat tomorrow, and many of the staff members will be there talking about their perspective on this organization's work, talking about, you know, their experience working with the young people that the organization serves. And then the staff and some of the board members as well get to build that final plan and set their goals, all of that. And that really, it creates a plan that people feel like, yeah, this is doable. We want to do this. These are the right next steps for our organization.
Well, you're getting the buy-in from the people. You're saying, like, the builders. To me, the builders sounds like I'm making an analogy to middle management. It sounds like it's the middle managers. You're getting buy-in from the folks who the plan largely impacts because they're the ones carrying out the strategic plan.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, thank you for that point. So one of the things that I did in writing this book, I had a manuscript, and then I opened it up to a lot of beta readers, and I got a lot of feedback. And one of the pieces of feedback was, well, who is this book for? And originally, originally it was like, oh, this is a book that I'll just give to prospective clients and they'll understand our work better. But then people said, no, you know, these processes can be used by a lot of people. So I think that the builders could be, if it's a small organization and you have a working board, it might be that the whole board, and there's one staff person, the whole board and that one staff person, that those are the builders. It may be that the board and staff together are builders. And it also might be, like, we worked with an organization recently or a couple of years ago that they had 55 people who came to the retreat and worked together with us to say, you know, what do we have this question, this visioning question, what do we want to see in place in the next 3 years as a result of our actions? So it's a practical vision. And everyone in the staff got to, you know, based on the work that we're doing every day, here's what we want to make happen. So it doesn't have to just be, I mean, I think it depends on the size of the organization, obviously. We just heard from an organization that has over 100 employees. It's really difficult to, you know, you are going to, not everyone's going to be able to be in the room in that kind of case.
Yeah, I just meant it as an analogy, like it's the middle management of strategic plan implementation. Like these are the folks who are going to be doing the work to carry out the plan. So you're getting the buy-in of the you know, the builders. Yeah. You call them the builders. Mm-hmm. So you're including them in the process. Obviously, if they're included, I think it's obvious they're more likely to be enthusiastic about it rather than what I laid out. You know, the country club plan after a weekend with the board.
Yeah. And yes, absolutely.
And half the strategic plan was developed over glasses of wine.
Right. Or, okay, someone says that we're supposed to raise $3 million, but that's not very realistic for, you know, the fact that we have the development staff that we have now.
Yeah.
You
know, $500,000 a year fundraising operation, the $3 million is not realistic in the next 3 years. All right. Okay. So, you know, you're bringing people in. It's equitable, inclusive. How do we know when we're ready for a strategic planning initiative?
Right.
What do we need to have in place? What do we need to think through? What do we need to maybe do for the year before leading up to? You know, what like how do we get our head around? Like, if we feel like we could use a vision for a 3 to 5 year plan, what do we need to have in place first?
Yeah. And so this is such an important question. I think that there is a lot of information about strategic planning out there. And so sometimes you hear from people who will say, oh, I'm starting at my organization. I want to build a strategic plan. And no, you do not need, if you are about to create if you're creating an organization, what you need to do at that point is actually start building your organization. You don't need to, you don't have enough complexity and actually, you know, time under your time of running the organization to start doing real deep strategy work. So I have a little grid in the book. It's also on, I've written about this in the past, where you can look at two questions. What is our programmatic stability and what is our financial stability? And you want both of those to be, you want at least one of those to be high and hopefully both of them, before you start to do some strategic planning. So if you're not there yet, there are things you can do. You can do an action plan for the year and think about, okay, we know that right now our fundraising is a little wobbly. What do we want? What are some steps we can take in the next year? Who's going to do those steps? And I do have a section in the book about action planning. And so either both looking at your financial stability and also your programmatic stability, do we have a sense of our core programs and how well they're working?
Okay, I was just going to pull on that a little bit. What does programmatic strength look like?
Yeah, I think a track record of success, basically. Like if you want to be able to say, we know this is working. It is we're getting some funding for it from the community. We have some client, you know, we have some client feedback that this works, all of that. And so we can keep building on it, basically.
Okay. And financial stability, what is that? Is that the x-axis or the y-axis? programmatic,
and right? Which, it doesn't really matter. You can do either one. They're both.
You got the two axes.
You got
four quadrants. Okay, it doesn't matter as long as you got the four quadrants. All right. What does financial stability
is really. We have a sense of where our funding is coming from. We have some, you know, whatever our funding model is, it's been worked out versus we have no idea where we're going to get funding for next year. That's not the time to do strategic planning. If that's your situation, the first thing you really want to do is shore up your finances. And then, okay, then let's come back and strategy is much more about what choices are we going to make now? You know, okay, we have a couple different programs. Maybe we're going to need to stop doing something because our work is getting complex and there's a lot of demand for it.
And both of these would suggest that, demand that a new organization, like you were suggesting, you know, hypothesizing, new organization wants to start strategic planning. They have no programmatic stability. They don't know if their programs work. They have no outcomes yet, and they don't have financial stability because they're a new organization. They don't know where their funding is going to come from. They don't even know if they're going to get funding. So,
right, exactly.
A 1 or 2 year old nonprofit shouldn't be engaged in strategic planning.
Right. I mentioned this this case in the book of a couple of years ago working with SOS Meals on Wheels here in Northern California, and the challenge that they had was that the executive director had a lot of conversations with the board, a lot of conversations with the staff, and people hadn't really come together to figure out what to focus on. And one of the things that emerged in the plan was, okay, we need a bigger kitchen and that will allow us to do more deliveries per week. And then we won't have to be, or I guess it's actually fewer deliveries per week. So we won't have to be driving our trucks all around. Just by coming together and agreeing on this, they were able to make it happen within a year. And it's really kind of amazing. And it wasn't like something that no one had ever thought of. It was just getting that alignment of getting everyone in the room to get that focus. And that's really what strategic planning is. But just going back to, you know, what we were talking about, when you're just starting out, you don't necessarily need to get everyone aligned. You kind of just need to start doing your work and prove that it works.
Yeah. Get out there and meet folks and do the work. Okay.
Yeah.
What are the deliverables of a strategic plan? What are we looking for from this?
Yeah, usually this kind of practical vision. We will look at the mission statement and look at mission statements from comparable organizations. Think about what kind of language are people using now, and does the mission statement need to be revised? And then we'll create some strategies and goals. And we go to a one-year implementation plan, and really often we'll be working with organizations to take that implementation plan and get it into the work plan of the organization. So you're going from three-year plan, 3 years to 1 year to quarters to what is the weekly work of the of people on the staff.
Okay. Okay, and I know implementation is the fifth of your five steps, but it's so critical because there's so many plans that just get written and created, and then I don't know, just put on a shelf. I mean, they're not referenced. You know, that was just a wasted exercise.
Yeah.
Like check mark, check box.
Yes.
Okay, we've got a strategic plan. We can tell the funders we have a strategic plan.
Right. And so a couple things. So one thing is we talk a lot about this is process and product. So as you're going along, you want to think about what is important to me? Why do I care about this? And that really goes in the plan. And so by the time you have a plan created, that it's something that makes sense, right? That there is that energy and alignment. But at the same time, yes, you're absolutely right that, and I think that it's like, okay, we're going to get to the destination, and then we're going to stop there. It's like, in my book, I actually talk about this phenomenon of the place where all problems are solved, right?
Yeah, this is not it. This is not it.
We may have in mind, maybe if I just, I don't know, if I just found a partner, if I just, whatever, had children, if I just, got a certain education, wrote a book, right? Or created a strategic plan, all problems would be solved. And I would be the first to, I wish life worked that way, and it doesn't. And you need to know that. You need to know that you will have your plan, but then new questions will emerge. And some of them are around, are there things we need to stop? Because that actually is being strategic to say we can't do everything. That we're a great organization. There's a lot of demand from the community. We cannot do everything. And then the other piece is, how do we slow down? And really, if we've been always reactive, can we start to think about how do we determine what we're focusing on and create a system to put that into our, to our work plan? And it's not easy. I it's not easy. Yeah.
I'm glad we spent some time on the implementation, even though it's the final step. It deserves a lot of focus because this is a big undertaking. It can be expensive in time and money. And it takes a lot of thought. It's not something that you can task somebody. I mean, in a half an hour, I need your contribution to the strategic plan, please. Uh-huh. It's 1 o'clock. Uh-huh. I need it before you go to lunch. It's not like that. So we're investing a lot into the process. It has to be carried through and implemented and used and relied on and looked back to and counted on.
Right. And by the way, I mean, oh my gosh, so many things to say about this by the staff as well as the board. And so that is, when I talk with an organization, I will say, well, how often is the staff referring to the strategic plan? How often is the board? You know, what is the board responsible for in this plan, and how are they doing on that? And what else is there to talk? I mean, there should be, and I do talk about that in the book too. There should be sections for the board as well. Maybe that's around fundraising or oversight or whatever it is. Connecting, you know, making connections for the organization, being that serving in that ambassador role. But the other piece is that it is important to sketch out, okay, now that we know what our goals are, who's going to be responsible for those goals, and how, and do we have the capacity to do this? So we had an organization that created, you know, there are different tools you can use as an RACI, which is responsible, accountable. There's a couple of different, I don't know if you've heard of that, a RACI chart. I think it's called Rocky or something. And
No, you gotta watch
so
that. You gotta watch Jargon Jail. I gotta lock you up in Jargon Jail. If you if you can't define the acronym, you can't use it.
Okay, well, I hadn't heard of this before, but our client was using this, and so it's like different people have different roles in project management, basically. That's what this is about. And so what they found out was that this poor executive director was going to be responsible for 15 new initiatives. You know, and there was just no way
Yeah, how
that
about
that was
one? How about one or two?
And so what they had to do was, again, slow down and say, all right, this person, we want to implement this strategic plan. We're going to need to hire somebody who's going to be working on some of these pieces, because we don't have it in our current configuration.
So thank you. I wanted to spend time on the value of the strategic plan that we're investing all this time and money into, and how it needs to be, you know, it's the plan. So follow the plan. All right, but let's go to the five steps, which are, I'm just going to tick them off quick. Kickoff, discovery, prioritization, planning, and implementation. What's our kickoff step? What is now? So now we decided we are ready. We've done the groundwork to make sure that we are financially and programmatically stable. We did have a lot of discussion around which is the X axis and which is the Y axis, but we were able to overcome that dissension within the organization. No. Program is the ground. It belongs on the ground. Program should be the X, and the finances should be raising.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So we overcame that conflict within the organization, and we decided we're ready. So what does kickoff look like?
Kickoff is really is to set it up to try to, so if this is an inclusive process, then being more open and transparent about information. What is planning? Some people may have done a lot of strategic planning in the past. Some people are very new to it. What are the steps going to be? People have questions around how much time is this going to take? And then also starting to figure out who will be those sharers, right? Who's going to be consulted in interviews and focus groups, possibly a survey. Is there going to be some? We usually do a day or day and a half retreat. When is that going to be? And even being transparent about decision making, again, is a way to say, okay, these are the final deciders, is this group, all this other larger group is going to be the builders, and these other people are going to be sharing their perspective. So really, that kickoff is really just setting it up. And trying to help people, you know, have this be a fun learning experience, decreasing some of the feelings of, oh, I don't know what this is, and so I feel worried that it's not going to go well.
Okay, so you said you usually do a day and a half retreat. So now we're now going back to the country club. Somebody sponsors us. They got a room at the country club. It's probably got a nice fireplace. Maybe it overlooks golf course or tennis courts. Maybe it's a tennis. Could be a tennis club. Doesn't have to be a golf club. I like tennis. So maybe it overlooks the tennis courts. You know, there's catering coming in. Are the builders and the sharers, they're invited to the day and a half to
The
bring their
builders are coming to
the
that
builders are coming.
retreat. Not
the
sheriff. Our retreats are often at the, I don't know, the park, you know, like the park.
Parks can be great.
You know, yeah.
I'm doing the stereotype.
little hut in the park, you know, yeah, but okay, here course. We are in Northern California, you know.
A hut in the park.
Or we've had hotel boardroom, conference room, all of that. But that you do make a really good point, right. Which is it is way easier, if possible, not always possible, but try to have that retreat somewhere that is not your office.
Yeah,
set the expectation that you are, you know, you're out of office, you're not having meetings, and please order the food ahead of time. Oh my gosh. I can't tell you how many, it's a few times early on where some, you know, they have the executive director. It's like, okay, what is your vision for the future? And the executive director says, I'm sorry, I need to go figure out what we're having for lunch. And it's like, no.
You know? Right.
So plan your future, not, you know, plan your lunch the day before. This is all about, you know, timing. Yeah.
If you're at the park, maybe you could grill, you know, if there's open grilling.
Maybe you could grill or
have it delivered to the park. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the sharers, well, then how do the sharers share their contribution if they're not invited to the
So lots of ways. So it might be sometimes if we're the, you know, we're the consultants, we'll do interviews and focus groups. You can also, if you're doing this process yourself, it's so easy to set up a Google form and just and put some questions in there, and then would say, okay, we have, I don't know, we have 10 staff people or 5 staff people. We're each going to do 4 or 5 interviews. We're going to put them in the Google form, and then we're going to spend some time at the retreat sharing what we learned from those sharers.
It's time for Tony's Take 2.
Thank you, Kate. All this week, Nonprofit Radio is at the 2026 Nonprofit Technology Conference in Detroit, Michigan. I've never been to Detroit, so I'm looking forward to that very much. It should be some fun. I have some meals at a couple of nice places, hopefully, in Detroit. We are, of course, as we do every year at NTC, we're capturing lots of interviews for future shows, interviews with people who are leading sessions at NTC. These are smart technology people helping you use technology better, more efficiently, more productively, choosing the right technology in some cases, all for, for efficiency, mission improvement. I love taking the show to NTC year after year, and this is our 12th year going to a nonprofit technology conference. I love it because N10, the host of NTC, is just very generous with space and working with us to get the interviews all set up in advance. They're just, you know, they're just great partners. You know, it's a pleasure to work with people who want to work with you, you know, who see your value. You see their value as well. It's a pleasure. So that's why 12 years running, and I'm sure we'll go 13 this time next year. I don't know where next year's is, though. I think it'll be West Coast, because they go East Coast, Central, West, and then back to East. Last year was Baltimore. This year's Detroit. So somewhere on the West Coast next year. Doesn't matter. Nonprofit Radio will be with them there. So that's where we are. Look forward to all those interviews coming up in future shows with all these smart technology folks at the Nonprofit Technology Conference. That is Tony's Take 2. Kate?
Safe travels.
Thank you. We're recording in advance, of course. So thank you. Thank you. She's, you know, here I say this week, and then she blows it saying, you know, gives it away that, no, I think people know that the show must be recorded in advance because it gets published every Monday. So we're not a live stream. So no, you didn't blow it. Thank you very much.
We've got buku buttloads more time. Here's the rest of your 5-step inclusive strategic plan with Renee Rubin Ross.
part of the kickoff, you know, you're laying it out. What's it going to look like? Some folks have never done it before, or the or our process may be very different than what they participated in at some other nonprofit or the same nonprofit 10 years ago. So how do we describe it? What is it going to look like?
So a couple different things. We will share some of the meetings that we're going to be holding and talk about some of the conversations we're going to hold as well, that we are going to be doing some visioning, and that strategic planning really focuses on how is our organization adding value? What's the most valuable thing that we're doing right now? And how do we do more of that? You know, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to say that, but I think that is the essence of it. And that is, it's a subjective question. It's actually, what do the people in the room who are doing the work feel is the most valuable part of the work? So there's no pure answer to what's most valuable. It's actually, what do we care most deeply about? And that is what we're going to build a strategy around. You know, and obviously that's informed by donors, that's informed by
data,
you know, by data, that's informed by, you know, what we're learning from working with clients, from working in the community, all of that. But ultimately the people who are building the plan feel is most important and needed to focus on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does this process include small groups? Like, do we ever send off a small group to think about this and a small group to think about that, and then
come back together? So it's so funny.
No, is it all a collective?
No. So actually, although you just mentioned kickoff, so we've really actually talked about, and we've already talked about almost all of the stages at this point, because
you have a lackluster host. That's the problem. That's the problem.
They're all connected.
Sorry. Okay. Well, they're interconnected. Okay, good. So we'll still go through them. But so, yeah. So can you have small groups working and then coming back and reporting?
Okay. So one of the things that we do at the retreat, which is a part of like planning and prioritization, which is those third and fourth stages, is to start to reflect on what was learned in the discovery work. And that we usually do that in small groups, and we'll do a SWOT. That is a kind of breakout, you know, like where you'll say, okay, one group needs to talk about strengths, and one group needs to talk about challenges, one group can talk about opportunities. And so you put that all on these, you know,
Let's define SWOT for folks. You have a big jargon jail problem. Big. I mean, you're still in jail from OCR or ROCI.
ACI.
So, all right. SWOT is you're evaluating strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats.
Something like that.
So a little SWOT analysis. Isn't that SWOT?
Yes, that is a SWOT.
SWOT.
We don't really talk about threats in our process, but we do talk about strengths. So we sometimes call it now you're really going to send me to jail, because we call it a SOAR, where you have some, it's more of a positive one.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, that's interesting. Threats is not a bad word. There are potential threats, like the economy, or weaknesses, or concerns,
risks.
Attrition. Staff attrition. Mm-hmm. Maybe staff attrition has been a problem. That's a threat. All right. Weaknesses. Yeah. All right. Well.
Or weaknesses or risks.
Weaknesses or risks or threats. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So we got like whatever. All right.
I think it's strengths, opportunities. Yeah. It's funny. I don't know what all these stand for. Yeah. But it is a positive based type of you know, conversation where people come together and think about it. There are different tables. Each table is working on one of these questions. So that is one way that we do breakout rooms and breakout groups. The really fun part of that is at the table, you might get somebody who joined the staff last year. And then another person who has been on the staff for 10 years. And so it's a chance to not only talk about what are the strengths, but also to hear from each other about how the organization has changed and some of what's happened over time. So it's really pretty cool.
I'm curious about Rene Rubin Ross, Triple R. Have you always been a planner? Like as a child, were you a planner, organizer type?
Oh, that's so interesting. I think that what really interests me is frameworks and thinking about and that's actually a reason why has been really fun to write my blog over the past, about 5 years now, and now turn it into a book and think about, okay, each time we do this, we get better at explaining it and sharing content, sharing, like, how do you go from the vision to strategies? And we have a step-by-step. So creating, I'm very interested in creating that clarity for people around what's going to happen next.
And was that you in childhood, like your teen years? Were you helping friends understand what's coming, like take it step by step? Were you that kind of kid?
I think that I do have a lot of curiosity and I like explaining things. And so I was at one point interested in being a journalist. So it's like asking questions and creating clarity so that people feel more comfortable. And I think that is a lot about what this process is being showing how the process is going to go. So even what we talked about kickoff.
Yeah. Right?
So that people are feeling less of a sense of concern, if they're new to strategic planning.
So are you like, were you a comforter? You comfort your, in childhood, did you comfort your friends? Say, here's what's coming. It's going to be okay. Are you a comforter?
I think that I write about this in the book a little bit too, is I personally as a kid did not feel so included. And so I think a lot about what does it mean to be included in something? What does it mean to feel like my perspective is valued and is honored? And how, for myself, how do I build spaces where people feel that way? And for now, it's really around all different kinds of identity, whether that's, me as a white person in allyship with people of color or, so around race, disability, LGBT, all kinds of identity. How do we build spaces where everybody is honored and respected? And man, that is more needed than ever in these times.
Yeah. Were you like me, like the last person chosen for the pickup basketball team or something?
I mean, are you kidding? I was hiding on the other side of the.
you didn't even want to play. All right,
I was definitely geeky, but I could see things that other people, it was like very insightful, and I think
like
that,
what? Like what? What did you see that other kids didn't see?
I guess, power dynamics, who is talking, who's not talking, how are people being treated, what's the step to find a solution to something. But so you need to find that solution, but you also need the influence, right?
to implement the solution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I've got the solution, but I'm not one of the cool kids. So
exactly.
So people don't listen to me. All right, we're very simpatico. I was a backstage geek, lighting, audio, worked the backstage console, cameras, things like that, AVA, audio visual, which was disparagingly I was in high school from 76 to 80. Yeah. So right, 76 to 80. So I was in AVA, the audio visual aids, but to make fun of us, we were called GayVA, because in the early 80s, you're gay, gay. Of course, you gotta recognize the time that I'm explaining this. So I was the backstage. So you're saying you were you were not in the cool clique either.
Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm.
Not like smoking in the girls' room. That wasn't you.
No. No, and I was too shy to even, you know, be one of the theater kids as well. You know?
All right. Well, yeah, I was in theater, but I was behind the stage. I was backstage.
Right. I was too shy to even do that, you know? Like, okay. But right. I have a lot of empathy, and I really think about in these times how to design and so that everybody has a voice. And that is in a very, you know, that's, again, we use technology of participation. It's a structured way of designing conversation so that we truly, if we're sitting in a large group, there's ways where you sometimes break it down and people can talk in their small groups. Sometimes you make sure that you can talk, everybody in the room has a, you know, way of weighing in, and people feel that their voices matter. And to me, that matters.
And that's interesting. See, that came from you feeling voiceless as and unincluded as a child. So that's wonderful that you're developing systems and processes that are inclusive. I mean, inclusive is the first word of your book.
Right.
Inclusive
right.
strategic planning.
Right. And I think yeah. you know, that's very common, right? People say they're finding healing in something that was hard for them. And so that's a real spot of, wow, I want to make I want to build a different kind of world, you know, going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about step two, discovery?
Even oh my gosh.
We've blended them all together because I keep asking you questions that make you digress, but I'm curious about these things. How about discovery? Yeah. What's that phase?
Yeah, it's really, so as we talked about a little already, that is those interviews and focus groups and sometimes a survey. It's really, and there's a lot of different reasons for doing this. I think like that's something that is important to be clear about is that you get a lot of information. It's not always actionable, right? And that is part of the process. And you need to, again, just be transparent about that. Sometimes we've had the experience of doing some amazing focus groups where people were thrilled with the organization. We've also had some really hard ones where people were not thrilled with the organization. And in either case, you just say, okay, we are sharing this back anonymously. We are going to take this under consideration. Not everything is actionable. And that's kind of what you have to do. If the leadership is doing a good job, they will work on some of the hard stuff that comes up. But they might be working on it already. And it also might take some time, you know?
Okay. And that leads to step three, which is prioritization. Everything everything can't be the first priority, of course.
Yeah, and I think this question, so this idea in top facilitation, we do the practical vision. There's different kinds of visioning. One is like, what would the world need to look like in order for us to close down? You know, and you sometimes hear these, we want a world where every person has enough water or, you know, has food to eat and that's great. That's very inspiring. The problem is like, wait, okay, how do we get from here to that? So the practical vision is much more just what's going to happen in the next three. What are we going to do as a result of our actions? What do we want to see in place as a result of our actions? And it's powerful. It's powerful.
And what do we want to see in place like over the next 3 years?
Correct. What do we want to see in place over the next 3 years? Sometimes five. And sometimes we'll go through the whole thing and then people will say, well, this is really inspiring. And we said 3 years, but it's actually more like 10, you know, and that's okay. I mean, but at least you kind of know where you're going. And, you know, the kinds of things that come out, it would be like more funding sources, serving additional clients in X area. A very satisfied staff with higher salaries, you know, different kinds of things that those are some like just on one hand. I mean, there's many different things that come out of this, but basically that the organization has more sustainability and stability and that people feel good about working there and feel good about the work.
What about the funding of the strategic plan? Shouldn't that be a part of the strategic plan? How are we going to fund the increased salaries, the additional positions? Shouldn't fundraising, funding it, just how are we going to pay? How are we going to pay for the strategic plan? Shouldn't that be a part of the strategic plan?
Yes. And you just reminded me so a couple things. So first of all, when we do this work, one of the things we do in Discovery is we do a fiscal review. And that is looking at the past 3 years. What are the budget trends? And it's a reflective, like a small group conversation often with like the board treasurer and CFO, executive director. We create a report that we then talk about at the retreat. So that planning is like the foundation of planning is understanding the finances of the organization. Understanding every line item, but you know, what is the general trend for this organization?
Yeah.
Okay. That's one thing. And then yes, there always needs to be part of the plan that focuses on funding. When that doesn't, occasionally that won't come up, and I will say, okay, as a good, you know, consultant, I feel my responsibility is to tell you that you need to make sure that this plan includes some goals around funding. Just to be, this is not just program. This is how, exactly what you said, Tony, how are we going to fund the work that we want to do?
Otherwise, implementation is going to fall flat. If we don't have the money to fund the plan, then what's the point of having the plan? Because we can't execute it because it requires more money than we have a plan to raise.
All right.
I feel like we're gonna persevere with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, even though I brought you in all kinds of different directions.
Number 4. I think we've been more like 5, 1, 3, okay. But that's why it's a spiral, because each it's an iterative process.
I saw that diagram. It is a spiral. Yes.
It is a spiral. Yeah.
So planning is your fourth. Planning is your fourth step. Is there anything that we haven't said about plan? I mean, is this the creation of the plan?
That is where you start to get into your goals.
Is this the day and a half retreat? Where's the day and a half?
I would say, the retreat is focuses on prioritization and planning. Planning is really starting to work on those goals. That it continues through. That continues after the retreat as well.
Okay.
Because you usually draft your goals in the retreat, but like a lot of things, they may need some work, some additional work. Basically.
Do you drill down to either OKRs, which is objectives and key results, mm-hmm. or KPIs? Notice how I define mm-hmm. everything. Key performance indicators. Do you drill down to OKRs or KPIs?
Sometimes, not at the retreat, but yes, we do have worked with organizations that's the way they work, and that's what, you know, they want. In other words, I think dashboards are. I think okay. So what overall you need a system that you are going to implement. Don't make it too complicated.
Yeah.
If you have a 50-page document that you are not going to, that's just going to sit on your shelf, it's not the right system. Okay. However, if you have a dashboard where you can easily say yellow, green, or red, and you know what that means for each goal, that's great. That is, you know, then you can see how you're doing on your plan and what you need to work on next. So it's really, what is the culture of your organization? What kinds of things do you track? Do you need to strengthen your systems? That may be something that comes out of the plan, right? And what's going to be useful for you that isn't going to feel so that isn't going to feel so burdensome? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you have a thought about OKRs and KPIs and all of that?
I have clients who have worked with both.
Uh-huh.
I'm agnostic between OKRs and KPIs. I mean, I go along with whatever the client wants to implement or whatever they're, you know, because I'm a narrow niche. I'm just doing planned giving fundraising in most cases. In most cases, that's it. So, you know, I'm happy to contribute OKRs and KPIs if that's what the system they work in, then I'll be happy to contribute. Yeah. I don't, mm-hmm. I can't say that I have a choice. Okay. I mean, not that I don't have a choice in what they do. I can't make a choice between the two. I don't see one being better than the other. My estimation, my limited role in participating in these with clients.
Yeah. And I think it sounds like you have a similar approach, which is, all right, how do we build on in, you know, as a consultant, how do I build on what you already have and make, you know, what we've created make sense to in terms of the way your system is set up.
Yeah.
So.
I just want, you know what? I just want to get out and start talking to folks about planned gifts for the organization. That's whatever we could do to start conversations.
Okay.
Reduce the lead time and the lead burden, the better. Whatever I need to contribute to. Yeah, I'm either building on what they have. It's usually very little because I'm usually inaugurating a planned giving program. So I'm helping them start from scratch. We're identifying top prospects and what the plan is going to be for each of those. Mm-hmm. And then the tier two prospects and what the plan is for that group. So there's usually very little to build on. In their planned giving. All right.
Okay.
That brings us to our fifth step, implementation, which we covered in the first step. Is there anything more you want to say about how this needs to be a living document? Or maybe you just want to reemphasize that it does have to be?
Yeah. I think that that's great. I do want to emphasize that it does need to be a living. And I think that the idea that... this is going to, you know, I think going back to what I said before, which is like knowing at the beginning that that you're not going to go to the place where all problems are solved, right? That there will be, that new questions will come up. On the other hand, the positive of this is you may have a lot more focus in your work. And just going back to SOS Meals on Wheels, when I was finishing the book, I reached out to them again to say, it's been a few years, how did things go? And the executive director shared, well, what happened was that he started to get in this, through doing this process, he started to think more about strategic opportunities. And so in 2024, he had someone who came to him and was applying for a different role and ended up being the director of advocacy and was really, really excited about that. And then with everything that happened in 2025, this person became invaluable in making sure that funding sources were secured or were saved. And, you know, he said that some of what happened with this role was actually just preventing, it wasn't getting new funding. It was just preventing funding from being lost. But that all that never would have happened if he hadn't been thinking about what is going to happen next and how can I start to look ahead versus being so reactive. There's some shifting in thinking that happens just by going through the process.
Triple R, Renee Rubin Ross. That's her.
Yay. That's her.
You'll find her company at therosscollective.com. Connect with Renee on LinkedIn. Renee, thank you very much for sharing. It was perfect. Great.
Yeah.
Great,
thanks so much. This is so fun to talk about. I can talk about it forever.
Unfortunately, we only have 49 minutes, but your enthusiasm and the way your eyes light up sometimes when your eyes get big when you're making some bold points. Like, that's right.
Good.
I love it. No, your passion for the subject comes out. It's a pleasure. Awesome. Thank you.
Yay. All right.
Next week, sell your nonprofit. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.